Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you. A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
And welcome to the AEW Dynamite Review. I'm Adam Wilborn from What Culture, joined by one of the Dudley Boys, Michael Hamflett from What Culture, to review everything that happened on last night's episode of AEW Dynamite. But before we get into it, if you're a fan of this sort of thing, make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling on either iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from for daily wrestling podcasts, where we not only review AEW Dynamite, but also AEW Rampage, Raw, SmackDown, NXT 2.0, pay-per-views, premium live events. We have interviews, roundtable discussions, and a roundup of the week complete with a bloody good quiz, of course, on wrestle culture. As I said, though, joined by Michael Hamflett. Michael Sidgwick still enjoying some well-earned time off, sat by a pool, probably reading his brilliant book, Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW, which is available right now on Amazon. I'm joined by Hamflett to talk about AEW Dynamite. And I don't want to upset Sidge if he's listening to this right now, but I had a weird emotion watching this show. It felt like a lot of big things happened, but I didn't feel they registered for me as much as they probably should have. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I didn't realise it started, sorry. Welcome indeed to Podcast Horseman, the BoJack Horseman podcast, a spoiler-free episode-by-episode audio review podcast of the critically acclaimed Netflix series BoJack Horseman. I'm a socially distanced Michael Hamflett.
And I'm Adam Nicholas.
I wish, mate. More on that later. I came in the office, and the very first conversation we had about AEW Dynamite, pretty much, like, we both had this mirror man take. This was eventful. This was absolutely an eventful edition of Dynamite. Why didn't it feel like that? We have said for years now, actually, that AEW, above all else, is it's a vibes product, right? And that's a really good thing, because you want good vibes and you chase them, and the highs are subsequently enormously high and the lows are kind of frustrating, because you're like, no, just give me the highs. And they can't all be highs, we know this, but like, what you want is the highs. It's not the way you watch WWE. It's simply not. It's a different feeling. It registers emotionally in a completely different way, and that's a good thing. And I think this was one of those cases where there just wasn't the... This didn't have the energy of a great show, despite having the ingredients of one. I guess sometimes wrestling is that. Like, the crowd weren't bad. Wasn't the best crowd of the year, but they weren't bad. The episode, if you look at it on a piece of paper, would probably play as one of the bigger episodes of the year, if you consider at least two of the things that happened on the show that had pretty enormous consequences, right? You should be coming away thinking, well, that was a memorable Dynamite for this reason, or that was a memorable, like I say, it was eventful, but yet it didn't feel like a big event. A very, very strange edition of the show in that regard.
Not necessarily bad.
No, and like a couple of matches, like I genuinely cannot wait to talk about and put over and praise, and like a couple of angles the same. But at no point, it was as if, right? It was as if like there was a volume knob and it was stuck. Like, everybody wanted to turn up to 11, but it was on 7, and nobody could wrench it. And they've got, like, somebody with, like, Eric Bugenhagen's strength going, ah, and screaming it and trying to turn it as hard as he possibly can. And it's just stuck, and nobody can switch it. And it's like, do you know what I think will switch it? Like, one of the biggest payoffs we've set up. The continuation, effectively, of an angle that begun when AEW started.
Yeah.
That's going to, like, turn up. They're going to rip the knob off for that one. We're going to rip our knobs off for that one. Doesn't happen. And then it just continues on in that theme. Like, we're going to completely tear up the script of the women's division tonight. That'll do it. Total banger of a match. Still doesn't... like
in the first hour?
Well, I mean, we're going to get to that as well. That's what I mean. Loads of stuff to get to. It certainly doesn't feel like a Dynamite, like, full of complaints. Or one thing shouldn't have happened at all. But otherwise, yeah, strange. Like, I think if we go through this bit by bit and you've cut this intro entirely, don't worry, there'll be more Podcast Horseman plugs coming if you missed the first one. Like, you'll hear it bit by bit and just hear praise, 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 praise. What the hell were they doing out there? Praise, 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 praise. It doesn't... I haven't come into the studio with the energy of that.
We've just come in from having a coffee, basically.
I've come in with the energy from that. Yeah, we are like bonus mid-morning coffees. I had an oat flat white. Tell the listeners what you had.
A banana latte! Might as well have had a curly-whirly straw in it.
Just dipping a curly-whirly in it.
Anyway, let's start at the beginning of the show, because it started with Jay Lethal versus Orange Cassidy. We'll talk about him in a second. Back and forth early on, Orange gets the better of it with his counters. Tope on the outside, and he's doing his little kicks, and Lethal says, I'm not having any of this. Walks up the ramp. Out comes the giant Satnam Singh. But how on earth do you counter that? you put Trent Barretta on Chuck Taylor's shoulders in a big coat.
I don't know what you're referring to. I just saw Trent Barretta in his new jacket.
What was the Excalibur line?
He said he's going off to the stock market to do a business, which is the completely legitimate career of businessman Vincent Adultman from the critically acclaimed Netflix series BoJack Horseman.
There we go.
Of which you can find a luxurious episode-by-episode audio review document, not just of BoJack Horseman, but of the complete mental collapse of myself and Adam Nicholas as a pandemic descends upon it.
Yeah.
Seven episodes in.
It is a weird sort of like time capsule, isn't it?
That's our diary of the world going insane. The first six or seven episodes were in the old, like in a building that we're not even in now.
Yeah, I remember the old studio. Yeah.
Like that was the, like in our little worlds, and indeed on a macro level, changed through that podcast, through reviewing the show where we talked ourselves horse about a talking horse. And if you are listening to this and are thinking, right, yeah, I've seen this on Twitter today, there's this reference to Vincent Adultman and Excalibur's little line and things like, oh, you follow me or Nicholas or whatever, and there's all this BoJack stuff. It's not Family Guy with a horse. It's not Simpsons with a horse. It's not South Park with a horse. It's better than all of them. It's the Wire Sopranos tier show. And
emotional, isn't it?
It's unbelievable. Binge it on Netflix. Feel sad about it. And then get over that sadness by listening to me and Nicholas talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, no offence, but when you first started doing this, or first started talking about it after the pandemic started, and you were like, it's quite emotional. I was like, no, I don't need to go to that place in the pandemic.
It was the strangest thing, because you're wanting people, like, it was great, obviously, that people listened along with us, and in some cases started watching, because everyone was binging, weren't they, in the pandemic? Yeah. So it was like, perfect, like, I'll get into this, and then I'll listen to you guys. And we would get tweets like that, and we would go, thank you, like, wait for this to be over, but what if it's never over? So maybe start watching. Like, it was, it didn't feel like, you know when sort of people like are offering, and like we're guilty of this sometimes, like you don't want to be offering advice outside of your expertise.
Yeah.
Like if somebody emailed us with this question about something we had no knowledge on, the last thing we want to do is like, I mean, can our funny voices buttons help? Because we can't be like serious medical advice. Yeah, it wasn't perhaps in the best interest of everybody's mental health to watch BoJack.
No.
But if you did and survived it, there's a podcast for you.
Speaking of which, I remember when the pandemic first hit, and I remember sitting there just going, yeah, I think we should do. I think we should just stop doing wrestling until this pandemic's finished, because it'll be over in a month or two.
Yeah. I remember just like, just postpone WrestleMania.
Exactly.
Do it in June. June. They do it in June. By June, they were taking each other's eyes out. Like by April, they were throwing people off a building.
Yeah. Right, we've gone to a dark place. How can I fix this? How can I fix this? There we go. Right, back in the ring, Lethal hits a dragon screw. Targets Orange's
dragon
knee.
Dragon screw!
Traps him with the steps, stomps on it. We go to a break. When we come back, Lethal's putting him in a figure four. Mm-hmm. Of course he is. Yeah. Orange gets to the ropes for a rope break. Lethal hits the lethal combination for a near fall. Taunts. That allows Cassidy to come back. Diving DDT. Another DDT gets him a near fall. Goes for the orange punch, but the leg gives it out. But he does counter a powerbomb into the beach break for a nice near fall. Goes for another orange punch, but Lethal counters it into the figure four. Orange reverses that into a cradle that I thought might have been the finish. But then Lethal stops an orange punch, or an attempt at an orange punch, I should say. Hits the lethal injection. 1, 2, 3. We'll talk about Lethal and what happened afterwards in a second, but I can't help but feel they've fumbled Cassidy again.
Feels that way, doesn't
it? Or they've, at least as Andy pointed out when we talked about this in the office, he's just kind of being used to make other guys as title challengers.
Yeah, which if that's what they think of him, then so be it, I guess. Like, it's, I can't be angry at what really was, I guess, my headcanon not taking place.
Yes.
That's not the job as, like, certainly as like as here we are on a podcast, you can feel that way as a fan. But it is representative of something that I think we can analyse, which is the what feels like a conscious attempt to reheat Orange Cassidy may have been put on pause or parked. Cassidy was excellent here. Like, I really want to isolate him for praise for wrestling and showing that he can, with this character, wrestle a very, very traditional style match. His selling was fantastic.
Yeah.
Like, he never, ever, ever betrayed the selling of that bad leg. And ultimately, it cost him. Jay Lethal isn't, like, the whole gimmick with Jay Lethal is, and I think he's just so boring. But he's not just a professional wrestler. He's a very professional wrestler. That's kind of Jay Lethal's ever. As either a heel or a babyface, he's that. If nothing else, he is that, right? So him working the leg and working the leg, and then when he's a babyface, like overcoming with his technical skill, when he's a heel, cheating a little bit, like he just tweaks it ever slightly, but fundamentally, that's what he does.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he professionally wrestles. And that's what he did to Orange Cassidy here. So on paper, I have no problem with the construction of this. I wish it was somebody else in Orange Cassidy's place. The only thing good about this being Orange Cassidy taking this L was teeing up the awesome best friends gag in the big coat. Otherwise, like, find me another babyface on this enormous roster to put Jay Lethal over in a match that's nearly as good as this one and set up Jay Lethal for what he's got coming next. Mm. Because wherever Orange Cassidy was in the rankings, if that was even top five, he's just slipped out of them. And what's he got coming up for, like, the pay-per-view?
Yeah, now.
Probably nothing.
Maybe trio stuff.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's going to be that, like, going to be a trios tournament. The trios tournament is such a useful device for AEW now, because that roster is going to get mined for these. You're going to forget that people are there. They're going to be made into threes, and it's going to make for an awesome bracket.
Who's going to be the third member of that team then? So you've got Orange Cassidy,
yep,
the tall one who came out and confronted Sanam right, yeah, Singh, and then you've got an extra spot, haven't you?
Yeah. So, I mean, it depends if they're going to be brave enough to, like, maybe throw Chris Statlander in there, like, as best friends, because, are you right? Like, they are short somebody at the moment, aren't they? They're tall, but they're short.
Yeah. So anyway, there's a lot of talk of promotions at the moment. They've been expanding their talent relations developmental team.
Yeah.
One promotion I'd like to see is Sonjay Dutt becoming an interviewer, because I loved him here. Yeah. He came out so biased. He asked Lethal about that bell-end Wardlow, basically. Lethal continues the insults, says he's going to make a statement now, and he goes to lock Orange in the figure four again. Out comes, best friends try to get involved, and then here comes Wardlow, and everyone bails. And Sanjay Dutt demands that Wardlow puts the TNT Championship on the line, a battle of the belts, and Wardlow welcomes them to Wardlow's world and says he's going to whoop their ass, which I think means he accepts.
Yes. I like this. I don't love it, but I like it. It's a good match for Wardlow to have. I think it's not going to be a squash, but it's not going to go super long. Mm-hmm. Like, Jay Lethal will absolutely make Wardlow look great. Wardlow doesn't need a lot of help looking great. And it's somebody that Wardlow can fairly comprehensively beat. They have done a really good job of physically separating Wardlow and Satnam Singh for when that inevitably happens. So that's going to look so cool.
That's the pipe, isn't it?
I mean, it is for me. I think we're trying to wish this into existence, but I at least want to see the face off. Like, how I would book this, by the way, is when Wardlow's defeated Jay Lethal, Satnam Singh squares up to him, and then, like, Jay Lethal backs him off, and we don't get any connection. But you see for a second, like, Wardlow is, like, looks like he's going to be outmatched by this bigger man, but then the bigger man backs off.
So I like the idea of this match happens.
Yeah.
Obviously, Wardlow wins. Sanjay Dutt squares up to Wardlow.
Yeah.
And then Satnam Singh steps in, and Sanjay Dutt's just like, kind of prick it up, spare prick it away, just a bit in the sandwich. Just, I'm here too.
I go for the baby, and I feel like Wardlow will beat Jay Lethal, and then that'll be that. This is fine. Like, Sanjay Dutt was quite a funny promo here. I did quite enjoy him. I don't know. This is a good example of which there are loads on this show where this was a development. This was a booked match. This is a rivalry that's going to get its payoff. It's going to get it at this, like, Battle of the Belts event. Things happened that carried along the story. I'm just not popping. Mm. I also don't think Wardlow's world is as good as they think it is.
No.
He leaves the kind of space that The Rock would leave for finally The Rock has come back to wherever. And it's just not that catch. It's all right, but it's not the, like, we've said this kind of since the MJF thing, by not striking when the iron was white hot, they've allowed him to cool. And it's fine, but you want to be a bit more, like, again, like, this is where people, I think, sometimes worry that we're too critical of AEW. There's, like, a couple of people that can, like, If you love a segment, if you love this, Wardlow, yeah, great, because I think they did everything in their power to make you love it. It just, I didn't get sparks.
No, it just feels like the Wish version of Wilbo's world, really, doesn't it?
Yep.
That's the words of people on social media, not mine, by the way. I'm just asking questions here.
I'd forgotten.
Can we have Wilbo's World? We've got Wilbo's World at home.
I forgot about Wilbo's World. Way! This latte is a banana from way downtown. Way! Like, nobody has steps, they're all slides. Yeah.
Plus, I'll never forgive Piggy for what he did to my boy. So, right, video package of Hook beating Ricky Starks at the FTW Championship. That broke my heart all over again. Mm-hmm. But I was also happy for Hook. More on Team Taz a little bit later on. And then it was time for story time with Adam Cole, baby.
Bye-bye.
Cole came out with the Young Bucks and Cool Kyle O'Reilly and Bobby Fish. Yeah. And it's so great to see the Undisputed Elite back together for the time being. He says how great it is to be back, but unfortunately, he's still not medically cleared to wrestle. And he's thinking about what he can do to help the Undisputed Elite. He puts over the group, talks about loyalty a lot. Mm-hmm. It's essential. He came to AEW out of loyalty to the Young Bucks. He says loyalty is everything. And then he turns his attention to the upcoming Trios title tournament. And he says both him and Kyle O'Reilly aren't cleared. And the Young Bucks, if they don't pick Bobby Fish for the tournament, what are they doing? That's
the group.
That's the team, guys. And he says, well, we're not physically capable of entering the tournament. And if you don't pick Bobby Fish, neither are you. And Fish and O'Reilly attack Matt and Nick Jackson. Brandon Cutler's laid out, I think. Mm. I think he's mainly just shouting and filming the whole thing. And they go to pulmonize, I think it was Matt Jackson with a chair. And out comes to make the save, to continue this story arc that we've seen, like you say, from the beginning of AEW, basically. Hangman Page comes out to save the Young Bucks with a pipe, I believe, in his hands. And particularly of note, who does he help up but Matt Jackson? Yep. Explain why that's relevant and your thoughts on this segment, because this was a seismic thing in AEW.
So at this point, anyone that's been listening to us three for long enough will know all this, but if this is your first episode, or if indeed you're just not, like, if the Elite lore isn't for you or whatever, Hangman Page and the Young Bucks relationship has been fractured, as has the whole relationship between the Elite. But Hangman Page and Matt Jackson was particularly the cruelest and most vitriolic. When the Elite were first falling apart, it was Page and Matt that were all too keen to, like, part company. They were never that close to begin with. Matt Jackson, when Hangman Page was experiencing a lot of problems in 2020, was the one that called him a jobber from Ring of Honor that we elevated. He's the one that, like, I think it was Matt Jackson that threw the drink at him, but he definitely called him a drunk when Page was looking in that broken mirror and he was suddenly, like, all alone and had nobody. And it turned out to be the Young Bucks and Kenny turning on him rather than the other way around. It was always Matt. Fast forward to Hangman Page conquering all of his demons and all his anxieties and defeating Kenny Omega. He threatened the Young Bucks, like, as a nice callback to how they didn't accompany him to his first title match against Chris Jericho. He said, don't you dare come out for Kenny Omega. And the Young Bucks hobble out, of course, at the pay-per-view. They've already had their match. And Hangman Page is just about to put Kenny away with the Buckshot Lariat. And Matt Jackson is there. Hangman shoots him a look. Remember the don't you dare. And Matt Jackson just goes, which on camera, because we're not getting filmed here, with a nod. Just a nod of, okay, finish him off. Like, we're not gonna step in. You do you. We're not cool, but we're not going to fight each other anymore. This is just done. And then ever since they've been teasing this coming together again of the Elite and of Hangman Page and the Young Bucks, it's been Matt that, like, we saw on a mobile phone, and then it cut to Hangman Page about to be interviewed, putting his phone away. And it's Matt Jackson that, like, Hangman, you see Hangman Page's ghost in the tunnel when the Young Bucks lost the tag titles, and it's Matt Jackson that's heading for the tunnel first, but, like, then Page just disappears off into the background. It's these two that kind of have this, have sort of developed this spiritual, like, they hated each other the most, so they now kind of love each other the most, and they want this more than, like, all of us want this, is for, like, them too, which led me to that sort of fantasy booking idea where Matt's like, we know who you want us to pick, guys, and we've got the guy, and then Nick Jackson goes, Kenny Omega! And Matt's like, oh, God. Like, maybe they won't go in that direction. Maybe they still can, because there was no formal announcement of Page being the guy, but you were led to assume that these would be the trio here.
Someone asked us a question on the news today about them winning the trio titles and then Kenny coming back.
Well, this is it, right?
Just being like, all right, guys.
Like, there's a lot of that, and that's the fun of all this kind of thing. If you're into it, there's a lot you can do with it. And I am into it. I really enjoy this. The segment was huge on those terms. Huge. Like, the Undisputed Elite have split. Adam Cole and Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly have turned on the Young Bucks, effectively turning them babyface. Hangman Page helping them has definitely turned them babyface. We don't know what the trio is going to be, if it's going to be Kenny or Paige. The Young Bucks having to pick is that kind of cool elite drama. The Young Bucks getting their revenge on Cole, Fish and O'Reilly should be this huge thing. It's that, like, Adam Cole came in on day one and very tacitly challenged Omega's authority as the, you know, he kind of like overlooked him, didn't he? That power struggle was evident from the first moment Cole arrived. All of this, like, not just big picture stuff, it's massive entire company picture stuff. And it wasn't that big feeling. The kid crying in the crowd was amazing.
Oh.
Like, they nailed that just in time, especially because, like, once Paige made the save, the dad posted a picture. And he's
yes,
like,
that was a relief.
He's fine now. And so they got that shot. Adam Cole did a line, and I wish I could remember what it was, but he said something. It probably was like, you know, like, we're all about loyalty. And the camera cut out, and he just had this glance, like, the sideways glance for a second, and it was to inform the viewer that all is not right here, and the Young Bucks cannot trust these three. But then he carried on talking. And that threw me off a little bit, thinking, oh, it's not tonight. That's the tell that the turn is coming, but like, and it's wrestling. We're supposed to see it before the people do, but it's not tonight. And then it was tonight, and the turn happened. So that should have had this, like, shock value. But it kind of went in slow motion a bit. Like, Bobby Fish applied some sort of sleeper on a Nick Jackson. And then, unless I'm misremembering, Matt Jackson stood there for so long before Kyle O'Reilly attacked him that he probably could have, maybe he was in shock, but he probably could have stopped it.
Mm.
And Kyle O'Reilly, like, mirroring the pace of his former best friend Von Wagner, took quite a while to get to Matt Jackson. They do the attack. Adam Cole, like, super kicks Matt Jackson in the face while he's being held, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And it just, this is big, big stuff that, again, just sort of felt fairly run-of-the-mill. I can't explain it. Like, I welcome anybody to say, oh my God, this was the hottest thing of the year. This was, like, what we've all been waiting for, especially Paige running out to make the save, making the implicit explicit in that big moment. And I'm looking at each other and this, it's happening. It's happening. It just didn't, I don't know. Like, again, like, it's a case of, like, a firework that is lit and finally ready to go off. And it's one of them ones that goes like, and just hits a wall nearby instead of exploding off in a flash of
color.
It
did make me think, should I be popping more for this?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure, I started thinking about Sidge, and it's a shame he's not here because I'd love to hear his reaction to this. Because I'll be honest, I reacted more as like, there he is, there's Hangman Page. Because I've complained for a lot in recent weeks of like, what's going on with him?
Yeah.
Like, I know they were building towards this and maybe there's stuff going on with being the elite that I've not watched and blah, blah, blah. But I was like, mate, you were world champion. They've got all this interim title bollocks going on. Everyone's getting a title shot except you. And you're just, I know they're building to something, but you're just sort of moping around and the Dark Order is going, ah, birthday. And I know they're transitioning to the trio stuff, so obviously, like I say. But I just felt like, wow, they've really messed it up with him since he was world champion. And then tonight, or last night, I was like, boom, there's my guy right there. So, but I reacted less to, like you say, this undisputed...
Should be seismic.
Yeah, split.
I'll say this now, because I want to get on top of this early, because I can just sense that this is going to be like a certain theme in this episode. There is a piece of garbage on Twitter, an absolute, like, no good piece of shit.
I'm trying to think who you might be referring to.
Rat somebody. And what he does is, every week, he engages with Sidgwick. They, like, rank it out of 10. Like, for a change, that complete loser has come up with a good idea. I would welcome anybody that listens to this podcast, when the link goes out, like, give us your Dynamite rating out of 10. Because I sense that me and you are going to share these feelings. Obviously, we haven't got Sidgwick here. He might have shared them too. I'd love to know, like, a rating out of 10 for this episode, and if like, everybody sensed this, was this like...
Murray was similar to us, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was like, was this a sort of... Was this doing the things that should have made it a 9 to 10 that instead was coming out as a 6 to 7? Like, because that's what it felt like to me constantly.
Mm.
And I don't want this to sort of be one of them podcasts where it's like, you guys were way too harsh this week. Like, honestly, give us your replies, and your reasons why, with the number, the whole deal. Like, rank it out of 10. I think that Rat Mains guy, he's like, you know, like one of those parody accounts, but he's like a parody of a good person. So he just sort of does the opposite of that. But it's a useful thing this of all weeks, because like that number should like represent a feeling that you've got. I say this all the time. Wrestling is supposed to make you feel before it makes you think. That's the job of it fundamentally. Like a pop is a direct emotional response. It's not, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
There's a big difference. And I think there was a lot more of, I enjoy that this is progressing this way, than, oh my God. And Dynamite has the power almost every week to give you that, oh my God.
Oh, we heaped the praise on it last week, quite rightly. Oh, sensational,
yeah, like,
last week.
An unbelievable, yeah, a perfect exhibition of what it can do. Like, and not just even once, segment by segment by segment. Mm. This had all the developments and makings of that episode. It didn't deliver the...
Yeah, I didn't sit there and go, that's really good for Daniel Garcia.
Yeah.
At the end of last week's show. I was like, oh my God, he's beating Bryan Danielson.
Exactly, yeah.
Right, Moxley's backstage. He's talking about Jericho versus Yuta later, and he says, I don't care. No, he says he doesn't care about who wins, because when the bell rings, he's got no respect for anyone. he's trying to hurt his opponent, trying to make him bleed. When the Blackpool Combat Club is all said and done, they're going to make the Heart Dungeon look like a daycare. He says, Yuta and Jericho both know Moxley well enough to know that they better show up next week. When they step in the ring with me, this is not a game. What a, like... You know, setting up the match for later for the ultimate boss at Quake at the Lake.
There was a line, and again, it's the sort of stuff that only Moxley can get away with, because otherwise, in the wrong hands, it's like it's a grenade that's going to go off like in someone's face, where he says, like, you know, at the end of my matches, someone leaves in an ambulance, even if it's me. And he's just like, you are the best, mate. Like, I want, like, when him and CM Punk, I'm saying when, I'm assuming he beats Jericho, when him and CM Punk come together, like, it's that feeling where they're both throwing the punch at the same time. I want the world to explode, because I never want to know what happens. I just want that to be the end of all of this. It's like, well, we hit peak humanity. They both swing a right hand. That's us. Perfect Armageddon.
And then Christian Cage, earlier on in the day, is chatting to Tony and slagging everyone off, obviously. Jungle Boy tries to run him over.
Yeah.
That's a way to get yourself banned before the match tonight. Because I was like, how are you going to have this? As I said on the preview, how are you going to have this where Jungle Boy's wanting to get his hands on Christian Cage? Mm. He's out there wrestling. And you're just like, I'll just wait in the back till the match finishes. Well, you try and run him over and security goes, yeah, you can't be here, mate.
It was, that's the point, right? It was way more functional than fun, this segment. Like, a guy nearly getting hit in a car park should be a total blast, and it felt really fake, but I totally get why they did it. Like, Christian hadn't even said a word, and the car hadn't started moving, and he was like, I forget what his line was, he was like, what the hell's going on over there? And then the cut was like, start the car then, Jack. Like, it didn't look real remotely, but I'm glad they went to the trouble of explaining that. That's, like, I'm glad they all continue to think about it, even if the execution's not so hot.
I'm going to say something right now, and I'm not endorsing this, but is it wrong? I want to see Tony Schiavone get hit by a car.
Oh, my God.
Like, the whole I thought, because I could see what was coming, they're in a car park.
Yeah.
Jungle Boy desperate to get his hands on him. And I'm like, you know, when you're desperate, you know, we've seen it a lot.
Mm.
Like, Edge speared Dominic, for example, on Raw. It's like, I was accident, but I was trying to get to... Like, I don't want Tony to get hurt, and I don't want him to be off TV, and you kind of have to write him off for months if that happens. But there was a bit of me that was like, I mean, he could.
You know what's, like, it shouldn't be as funny as it is especially when you know that it's fiction and it's not real. I'm not saying this about real life. A splayed body is really funny. You know when there's like, you know when Moxley got taken out and they never paid it off?
Yes.
And it was like, he was in the shape of the Hanged Man, and it was supposed to be this, like, Reddit tease and stuff like that. But, like, when there's a leg and an arm, it's just like, bleh, like, it's really quite funny. And you could do a cutaway gag where, like, you just, like, the camera's watching Christian Cage running, and you just hear a boom like that. And then the car speeds off, Jungle Boy's chasing him down the road. And then the camera just turns around, and Tony Schiavone's splayed. So nobody's gotten hurt, but, like, the implication. And then he turns up next week with, like, a neck brace on.
Thinks he's working in a coffee shop again.
It's the latte!
Now, I'm just saying, we know TK listens, just saying that you can still do this, mm-hmm. just maybe tweak it a little bit. So Jungle Boy eventually wins the feud with Christian Cage, mm-hmm. right? Let's say it all out.
Yeah.
Dynamite. We're going to hear from Jungle Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's him in the car saying, well, dealt with that bell end. I'm looking forward now. I'm one of the big guys in AEW. You know what? Maybe things are really looking up for me this year. And then you do the Michael Scott scene from The Office with, what's her name? He rolls up onto the hood, but with Tony Schiavone.
Oh, and he runs over Meredith.
Yeah.
It's going to be my year.
Because I just want him to do the, like, you know, the way she does it, like,
it rolls off. I thought you meant, like, he was going to pull into work and, like, try and get in the car park at playing Lady Gaga going, it's Britney, bitch.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Right. Out of nowhere.
It's time to play the game!
What?
Yes! They put a women's match on the first hour!
What? I mean, give us the jingle.
Well, this is ladies' night. I'm thinking,
ooh, BoJack Horseman.
More of this, please. I mean, the match itself, obviously, but certainly don't just put them in the death slot before the main event.
Holy goddamn. Remember those like really grandiose, too grandiose, quite honestly. I'd say like around like the early 2000s, there was like WrestleMania video packages where it's like, time has a funny way of showing itself and all around the world, you've got to celebrate in life. And you'll see these like people, there's like not a thing to their name, like no money, no home, no future. But for one night a year, they come together around the old black and white television and watch WrestleMania. And it's like way too big, yeah. Way too big. This felt like the wrestling world equivalent of that. It's like, time is a funny way of not being 1 hour and 20 minutes, but instead around 35. And the women are coming out. We're like, what? Everybody stops. What?
Yeah.
Wow.
People like thought like, wait, have I lost an hour?
Yeah.
Are we about to just watch Jericho and then go home?
I thought this was live, but my fight feed has skipped. I want a refund.
I was so thrown by this. It was a very welcome change.
Yeah.
Unless you are Michael Hamm for playing the game.
Hello.
So once again, always a shout out to Adam Blair at AdamWilton4 on Twitter. Who is keeping track of all this and now has got the standings. Well done, Adam.
Yes, thank you, Adam.
Because I definitely was thinking, I can't remember what the scores are, but I can run you through them.
Yes, please.
Guess, 0-1. I think that was Murray, maybe, last week. No, I don't know. Michael F. The Fed Sidgwick, 2-3.
Not bad.
Adam, King of the Mike Wilborn, acknowledge me, 5-2. And
hit me with it.
Michael, the Encyclopedia Hamlet, 0-5.
Low fives. I'm going for the. There was a. You remember Mark and Lard?
Yes.
They used to have a. The Cheesley Cheerful Chart Challenge was a game they had. Right. I think it was that. Anyway, it was one of the Mark and Lard features.
Great. They heavily influenced me and you.
Yeah. Like one of the Mark and Lard features was if you got a question wrong, it was like a 10-question music quiz. You could go for the reverse sweep. It was like it had to be A or B, right? And you can go for the reverse sweep. And if you got a perfect 10 of wrong answers, like you won as well. So like somebody would get like 2 wrong and it was like, well, you might as well go for the reverse sweep now. So you're trying to guess wrong each time. Like I want a reverse Undertaker streak. Can we get to like who will be the one in my 21-1 when I finally get one right? What's going to be the match?
So yeah, you said 1 hour, 29 minutes, 44 seconds.
Would have won last week, probably.
I was going to say, I said 1 hour, 22 minutes, 36 seconds. Last week you said, I think it's going to open the show. Which is just stupid. But also, if you'd have said that, you'd have got it.
I'd have been right, yeah.
32 minutes, 41 seconds. 0 hours.
That's incredible. Is that, like, here's a stat. I'm not putting this on Adam Blair's shoulders, but if anybody out there is, like, into their stats or has got stuff like this to hand, how many Dynamite, like, I reckon this must be one of a handful that have been in, like, the 30 minutes range on Dynamite. Yeah. Like, and even then, you could probably count them on maybe 2 fingers or so. can you think of a match that was in like the sort of the 30 minute range on Dynamite?
Nope.
I can't. But there will be one out there. There will be one out there. But I bet it's less than five. I'd say with confidence it's less than five times in 3 years. Wow.
So we got... Wow. We got Thunderstorm. That's Thunder Rosa and Tony Storm versus Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter. How can I describe this match? Oh, yeah. They beat the living out of each other.
Oh, my God.
What? Like, were they told, right, we're not going to put you in the death slot, but you kind of need to justify it. And they went, what if we don't pull a single punch and just shoot hit each other?
Oh, my God. Like, this was. And contextually, it works.
Oh, yeah.
Because... So Thunder Rosa is wearing the shirt to try and reclaim the sandbag thing. Like, it says sandbag on it as a way, which is that cool thing they do.
Good,
like,
night for shirts this week.
Like, you disarm your bullies by owning the thing, and then it turns out that they were the small people all along for picking on that in the first place. And, like, she does that, and Thunder Rosa and Britt Baker have an exchange in this match that I don't watch MMA. like you do. But... if you could sit down with your MMA eyes and find me a fight with an open-handed slap as hard as the one Britt Baker leveled at Thunder Rosa.
Diaz has stopped in slap coming out.
And, like, welcomed basically a return. Like, I have not seen this many raw potatoes since the Stone Cold Steve Austin documentary because they were flying all over the goddamn joint. The sequence of... I'm sorry I'm trampling over your play-by-play, but the sequence of running... rear view butt splashes at the end.
Oh,
Jesus Christ. The head snap on like Britt Baker on the last one was something else. Megad.
So yeah, Rosa and Baker starts it off. Baker goes for a quite quick lock jaw, but Rosa counters it, cradle, back suplex, Hayter comes in, and Thunderstorm work together to beat her down. Frequent tags. Rosa just kicks her square in the back at one point for a two. Hayter fires back. That lariat of hers has got some force behind it. Jesus. Her and Baker take control, take us to a break. When we come back, Rosa hits a stunner, gets to Tony Storm, hot tag. She runs wild. Diving crossbody for two, takes out both Baker and Rebel on the outside. Climbs the ropes, hit another crossbody. Alabama slam gets her a near fall. Thunderstorm go for the double suplex, but in a great touch to really showcase what Hayter can do. She counters it, tags in Baker. They go for a double team. Rebel jumps up on the apron, distracts Storm. That allows Baker to get rid of Rosa and cut her off. And Baker hits an avalanche air raid crash off the top rope and tags in Hayter. She hits a sliding lariat and a curb stomp, but Rosa comes in the last second to break up the pin. Rosa and Baker, at this point, I think is what we're talking about, just start going at it like bloody... Ugh. Do you know what it reminded me of? You mentioned UFC. UFC 269, Amanda Nunes, UFC women's bantamweight champion at the time, versus Juliana Pena. And they just, in that match, I think they just went, one of us is going to get knocked out here. So we're just going to swing for
Let's
it.
Let's go win, Millie.
I'll give you a clue. It doesn't end in a knockout, but it's well worth watching on YouTube.
Okay.
Get the chance.
269,
it's
is
unbelievable,
it?
That yeah. fight. And Joe Rogan and DC just go bonkers for it. Anyway, completely off topic here. So, yeah, they start beating the shit out of each other in the middle of the ring. Baker gets the better in exchange. Air raid crash again. Storm hits Baker with a DDT. Hayter hits Storm with a wicked backbreaker. I think it was Tony Schiavone who was like, oh my God. simultaneous Germans from Thunderstorm. Storm goes for those hip attacks, like you say, in opposite corners. And Baker Baker gets out of the way and, Storm accidentally hits Rosa with one. She looks like she's out cold. And then you're like, okay, what's going to put Storm down? Oh, basically a clothesline from hell. One, two, three. We didn't call this.
I love the goddamn bones out. I think this is my favourite match, wrestling match of the week.
Like, yeah, you might be up there.
Oh, my God. So everything, like, when execution wasn't flawless, it was gritty and violent, which is perfect. Because you want to see something well worked, but then as like there was a constant feeling of a fight. There was a like they, and I believe this was a work, and I believe this was a perfect orchestration of them using a little bit of some people's knowledge, and this is really important, right? A little bit of some people's knowledge to inform a worked exhibition of a match.
If you watched that and you didn't know anything about that, you still would have enjoyed it.
You're just watching a stiff fight, right? You're like, wow, wrestling looks real when it's done really well. That's what you're thinking. Whereas, like, if you know a little bit of some stuff, you also get to think they're just getting out the frustrations. Thunder Rose and Britt Baker in particular are just getting out their frustrations on each other, but they're doing it in the most professional capacity possible. Mm-hmm. And you'd like to think they'd come back and share a beer or whatever and be like, we made the best of this one. We're not mates, but, like, this is what you can do. And this was such a good match on its own terms. We both sort of speculated that this was as much to do with the potential impending breakups of both teams rather than the match itself. It was a little bit of both, wasn't it? Because the match was absolutely fantastic. And then afterwards, obviously, the finish of pulling Thunder Rosa in the way of Toni Storm suggests that maybe Britt Baker was right and maybe Thunderstorm are not quite as quick.
They can't coexist.
Yeah, firing on all cylinders maybe as they may seem to do. And that'll be like, that doesn't matter for right now, but in a couple of weeks when another match doesn't go right, that's when you start talking about the dissension, all that kind of thing. Baker and Hayter were as like slick and smooth together as I've ever seen. There was a point where they were working Thunder Rosa in the corner and they were like just hot tagging in and out. Like,
yes.
Not hot tagging, quick tagging, sorry, in and out. Putting the boots in, and then like Baker in particular, she's so amazing at finding cameras. That camera she found in the corner to do poses in between the two of them, being like, this just looked, what a bunch of bastards. Like, everything worked in this. Everything clicked. Everyone knew the characters. This was just sublime stuff. A glittering advert for the women's division. And like, I don't know if like this was a little bit of, well, Madison Rayne's here, let's show up. We can do, impress the new boss sort of thing. Like,
she's on Rampage, isn't she?
Yeah, she's debuting on Rampage, but like, it's not a, obviously whatever she does on Rampage, we don't know, but it's not a hidden thing. There's a press release out there saying she's going to be a new coach for the women. They just trademarked All Elite Women or something. What was that, what they trademarked?
Something like that, yeah.
Change Rampage to a women's show. If that's what the trademark's for, just get rid of Rampage. Like, call it All Elite Women, just like, if you can't be arsed with them on Dynamite every week, let's have three matches of this standard on a Friday night. And if the ratings tank, well, they were tanking at Ratter's Rampage anyway. So just, you know, like, make that shift, make that pivot. Or, like, you know, patronise them and give them Dark or Dark Elevation, but at least, like, then give them time and say, look, this is where the women live. Yes, we effed it on Dynamite, but, like, here you get them here instead. Because this was a ripper. This was, yet again, a glimpse at what all of this could be all the time. Excellent stuff.
We get a video package talking about Sammy Guevara and Tay Conti getting married. I think from the bloke who did Smashing St. Ives back in the day. But Eddie Kingston interrupts it and says it's a load of bollocks. And Guevara's got a receipt incoming, signed the contract. He wants a match with him at All Out.
Like, the bit was good. Kingston on the interview getting angry was funny. We always say this. Eddie Kingston's best feud is not with Chris Jericho. It's not with John Moxley. It's with the idea of having to be a television character. When he's like, I'm not going to stare at this screen like a stupid moron, like whatever those words were. Brilliant. Eddie Kingston versus Sammy Guevara, man. Are you taking the piss out of me? Like, surely, and again, like, I welcome the replies. Give us your scores, all that kind of thing. Does anybody want this for the pay-per-view? Like, this feels like an enormous, like, Eddie Kingston deserves better. Later on, you've got this promo coming up, right? Where, like, and we always say, you have to be very careful when you're doing the, what's going on with the authority, like Ethan Page doing the whole deal. Like, the shoot version of that is Eddie Kingston. Because what has he done to find himself relegated to this middle-of-the-card nonsense? Like, I'm dreading that Sammy Guevara's like, nah, I'm not doing it. Like, well, why don't you bring your little friend along and we'll have a mixed tag match? Like, and then
it's
Kingston and Soho versus Conti and Guevara, and it's like, fluff. It's not a dig on Guevara particularly.
No.
We're back to vibes.
It's the whole patronising. Well, he didn't win the feud, but he made him bleed. You're in a fucking barbed wire match. Of course he's made him bleed.
Yeah, and like he wins. Let's say he beats Sammy Guevara. He's beat the underling. So what? Everybody must be thinking there's got to be more Freddie Kingston than this. There has to be.
Heartbreak for me again next, because we got a video package recapping Powerhouse Hobbs. More on him in a second.
Yeah.
Turning on Ricky Starks. And they go, Taz, what's going on, mate? And I love this and hate it at the same time, in terms of I love the way it was delivered and I hated what resulted from it. Because he basically went, right, I didn't authorize any of that.
Yeah.
I didn't authorize, you know, another match for Ricky Starks. I didn't authorize Hook. And I didn't authorize Powerhouse Hobbs turning on Starks after the match. So you know what? Bollocks, you can sort it out yourselves. Team Taz is done. Good luck to everyone. Heartbreaking again, as I say.
Heartbreaking, brilliant. Like again, like this to me was one of like the highlights of the show, because this is one of those seismic events that actually I felt something for it more than they're just the whatever. Like, I love this promo from Taz as well. Like, if I don't know what's going on in Team Taz, there's no Team Taz. Like, I'm Taz. Like, that's, you know,
that's
like,
kind of important.
I should be on like sign off on this kind of thing.
I'm at very least 50% of this group.
What this was the best possible way to tacitly acknowledge that this stable has worked to utter perfection.
Mm-hmm.
Like last week's segment was an example that the stable has worked to utter perfection because Starks got over, like Hook went over, Starks got over, right? You've given Hook his dad's belt to now go and defend with like real honor. The FTW title suddenly has all this like familial gravitas because Taz in that fantastic backstage promo was like, that was on our mantelpiece and now you're carrying it over your shoulder. Like, I'm a lying Hook, and he doesn't speak, but he's like, he's nodding. Like, Hook has grown up looking at that above the fireplace and now he's got it over his shoulder.
Yeah.
That belt's like going to be...
That girl who won the 10,000 metres last night for Scotland. I was in tears watching that.
I didn't see that. What was the crap?
Her mum won it like 30 years ago.
Oh, amazing.
And she won the 10,000 metres. Scottish at the Commonwealth Games.
Class, get in. Like, that's the sort of thing where, like, that's going to mean so much more, that belt now. Some heel's going to try and take it off him and it's like, why would you try and take this family heirloom off this, like, young hunk's shoulder? Hobbs ripping through the group. He's not, like, Taz is a badass. So if Taz comes out and he's, like, bleeding heart and, like, well, how could you do that, Hobbs? Like, that's not in keeping with him, is it?
No.
It's like, manage your business, guys. But it's this acknowledgement that everybody has benefited from Team Taz. It was awesome, and now it's done. There is a... I'm going to make a lofty comparison here, not least because I think all three can go in this direction. There is a Shield quality to splitting these up when you did and how you did it. Like, I think this was super, super impressive. Draw the line now. Brilliant.
I'm pressing the button, Michael. I'm pressing it.
Oh, my God.
Powerhouse Hobbs' entrance.
Yeah.
I said this on the news. He looked about 7 foot tall.
Mm.
Came out the middle bit.
Adrenaline in my soul. It's Willie Hobbs. Let's go. It's great seeing him come under the air.
He comes out. Like I say, I hate him for what he did to Starks. I got to respect that entrance.
Mm.
And, yeah, Rex, poor Ren Jones, crushes him in the corner. Oklahoma Stampede. Lariat. Squash win. Post-match, Ricky Starks comes out to get his own back on Powerhouse Hobbs.
Yeah.
And because of that bloody referee, he allows Hobbs to recover just long enough to hit that huge spine buster. I'm so glad, you know, sometimes just the basic stuff, like... Just give him a move, right, that has been used to be big and is kind of just, you know, what is it, a DDT, is it?
Diminished returns because of overuse, yeah.
I'm sorry, if Powerhouse Hobbs hit me with that spine buster, I'm not walking for the rest of the year.
Just.
He looked massive here.
Yeah, no notes on the whole thing because you nailed this. And here it is, right, this was the segment where a big thing happened and it felt like a big thing. Versus a lot of big things happening on this show and you going, oh, that big thing just happened. This felt hot. This match is hot. This feud is hot. This thing has been brilliant. It's going to rule it all out. It's going to be the match that Ricky Starks has and wins that backs up all that big talk of his. And the squash, like we talk a lot about the successes of certain AEW squashes. I want, when it happens and when it happens so quick and impactfully and like throwing it back to say like Lance Archer early in the pandemic, you know when somebody is absolutely brutalized by something on Twitter, and then there's like a really dank reply and it's like it'll be like a SpongeBob meme or something. And they've just gone dead. And it's D-E-D.
Mm.
It's not like, can't even stick the A in there. Dead. Like that. I want that feeling on behalf of the jobber. Like, how'd your day at work go, darling? Dead. Like, just wants to go to bed, doesn't want to talk about how they were absolutely murked by Hobbs. All of this was brilliant. Well done, everyone.
Eilish or Eilish, I've butchered her first name. McColgan is the Scots... Scotswoman.
Oh, Liz McColgan's daughter.
Liz McColgan's
daughter.
Wow. In front of her mum.
That speaks to my age that I can remember Liz McColgan winning. Yeah.
Go and check it out if you haven't. It's a really nice clip on.
She was great. Like, Liz McColgan could go. Like, yeah. Like, I remember, like,
26 years on, I think.
Certain athletes get famous. Like, it's not the easy thing to get famous in athletics, is it?
No.
But, like, Liz McColgan could go. She was like, she would do the, like, win the gold medals and stuff, and then, like, she'd make it onto, like, the You Bet circuit. Or she'd be like celebrity stars in her eyes or whatever. It's like there's certain ones like the mainstream crossover stars. I like Liz McColgan.
Another Miro promo talking about his uncertainties, whether God has sent a visitor that's talking to him. More teasers about him in the House of League.
Oh, boy.
And then we got Darby Allin. That's not going to come out in the wash. Tattooing on his own hand about the coffin match and the coffin drop he's going to hit Brody King with on next week's show.
My favourite thing about this was... we know AEW listen, but apparently they also watch. Because if you pull up the graphic to it, it's quick by, we were saying quick at the lake, when it's quick by the lake, or I was getting that wrong, the graphic of this match is all like spooky. Brody King looks like Ric Flair on our news thumbnail from 2 days ago.
Yes.
So go and treat yourself to that. This looks great. The aesthetic's brilliant. The match is going to rule. Darby Allin's a dweeb and I hate him.
Sorry. Sorry, I've just got confused in my notes here. I think I've got them from 2002 because it's Christian Cage versus Matt Hardy now.
Do you know what I was saying? Like, the way you sort of framed all that, I was like, can Patrick do an interview on the show?
Yeah, what would you make of this?
It was crap.
It was as we anticipated.
What do you want me to make of this? Like, the sort of... God, like,
stupid that Matt Hardy got so much offense, I thought.
Like, it went on such a long time. Matt Hardy got so much offense. And, like, the only thing that was more of a heavy lift than Matt Hardy's opening match double leg was Excalibur calling it a double leg. Did they? You know, there's been a lot of... People don't like it when you do this. You had some real fun with this once upon a time. People do not like Edge and Christian comparisons.
Oh, yeah. On
Twitter. They do not like that at all. You cannot. And it works both ways, right? This is not like an anti-WWE thing. If you make a comparison 1 week and it's like, why do people compare them, guys? Come on, just enjoy all the wrestling. Enjoy Edge and Christian. It's just, for some reason, there's a real hair trigger on these Edge and Christian comparisons. Like, you want to treat yourself. Like, if you want to, if somebody wants to go two-footed on the AEW corner of that divided audience this week, do a side-by-side of Edge ripping through Dominic with a spear and then compare it to Matt Hardy's double leg on Christian.
Is it like a switch? Can only one of them be doing good stuff at any one time?
It's weird, man. It's like there's a real tenseness around this sort of, like, when Christian was having this, like, amazing run, just taking the piss, like, working Kenny in these, like, classics, and it's like, you sure you made the right call, Edge, and stuff like that. You know, they're making you do, like, Judgment Day stuff versus Jungle Boy.
Yeah,
and like,
Judgment Day, but yeah.
Sorry, yeah. we're circling around and talking about this match because this match absolutely stunk and it had no right to be on the show.
I just thought, like, there was a bit of me that was like I said, I was watching this show going, this is good, but I'm not feeling it.
Yeah.
And then there's always a point where, you know, maybe it'll get to two-thirds of the way through, and that's when I start forming, like, how good is this Dynamite? Mm. Just how hyped should I be when I get into the office? And occasionally I'll be going, best Dynamite ever, best Dynamite ever, best Dynamite ever. And maybe there's a botch or something happens, yeah, and I go, oh, okay, right, it's not going to be the best Dynamite ever. And as soon as this match got set up and I'm looking at the clock and it goes as long as it goes, I was like, yeah, all the air's come out of this balloon, even if it was something that, like, even for people that may have, like we say, felt more for the split of the Undisputed Elite,
yeah,
or whatever it may be, I just thought at this point, I was like, well, it's gone.
I don't want to heap just muck over this whole match. And I'll have when you've done the recap, by the way, the play
I'm
by
not sure
play.
I can be arsed.
Well, I'll have nothing to add. Like, this is the thing, right? I can't be arsed. I want, if anything, like...
Such a weird... Why don't you have Christian Cage wreck a dude?
Right, and that's the thing. Like, Christian Cage is out there having this match, and he's fine. You know, Christian Cage is having a fine match. Like, is Matt Hardy all right? Like, he didn't... He wasn't... I know, like, the Hardy Boys, they're not moving well, blah, blah, blah. Like, he wasn't... Like, was he even moving? Or
surely the move here is Matt Hardy, quite rightly, goes, you can't be saying that sort of thing about my brother. That's my brother. Me and you on Dynamite, right? And you just do, not exactly the same way, obviously, but you do Brock Lesnar Cena at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
And you go in, you go, right, this is going to be interesting. And Christian just runs through him.
Yeah.
And you suddenly go, oh, when he tries, he can go.
Yeah.
Like, I watched this match and went, oh, Jungle Boy's going to beat him then. Easy, no bother.
A competitively technical match didn't tell any of the stories that they're telling at the moment. Like, Matt Hardy tried with the kind of, they're not going to start with a lockup. He's going to, and Christian rolls
exactly
out the ring. But I mean, but then the double leg was an absolute criminal disaster. Like, there are better, honestly, there are, and like, there's better connection in a Lash Legend match than there was this attempted takedown by Matt Hardy on Christian when the two can do this together in the sleep, and they can. And a lot of this was done in their sleep, and it was done in half the people in the building's sleep as well, because like there was no, like you were watching like wrestling. I've said this before when like wrestling is happening in front of you, but that's kind of a criticism of bad agenting, because normally what I mean there is a good match is happening and I'm not feeling anything. Mm. This wasn't even that. This was just two blokes bumping into each other in front of you. Like, it wasn't even energized. It didn't. Like, once they got the kind of, man, these two really want to get to each other out of the system in the first minute and a half, you have to keep that energy throughout. Otherwise, what was the point in starting that way? I didn't get this. I did not get it.
Do you know what I mean? I'll say this. I understand that there you go. The finish is Matt Hardy's so desperate to cause pain to Christian Cage. He does this stupid thing to try and put him through this table. He overexerts himself. Christian's smarter. Mm-hmm. Christian's more wily. Boom, that happens. He sends him back in the ring. Kill switch 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
I get that that was the what you're trying, story you're trying to tell. Mm-hmm. But it, I was just like, bloody hell, Christian's been taken to his limit here by Matt Hardy.
And
Matt Hardy got so much offense. Like I say, Christian, takes control, sends Matt into the steps, takes to commercial. I'm just going to cliff notes it, bollocks to it, right? But then we come back, Matt's superplexing him, back body dropping him. Yes, Christian counters a twist of fate, but then Matt hits a bloody diving elbow drop.
Mm. I'm really not sure what it was.
Side effects, you got all of Matt's offense, basically, apart from a twist of fate.
I don't know what we were supposed to be watching. You know, like how Christian, if he's not having like total rippers or involved in like a super emotional storyline, the whole point is, well, like what a benefit he's going to be to some young guys to get to work with a Christian.
Yeah.
To a lesser extent, like that with Matt Hardy too. Like the experience, I've never taken a goddamn bump in my life. Fair play to Matt Hardy for still going. Like the stuff he's been through, like I'm sure there's loads of young guys that would want to work with him for the same reasons, right?
Having faced fucking Griff Garrison or something.
What are they doing with each other? Yeah, what like...
Have Griff Garrison or Brian Pillman Jr. go, right, you've been kicking the shit at me with your bloody dinosaur previously.
Perfect, yeah, yeah.
Now, let's see how you are. And he's still great because mm-hmm. he's Christian.
And they get something from it because it's like the stuff we don't see.
And it would still make more sense that he wanted to concerto him afterwards.
And like Griff Garrison gets like one near fall and it's really hot because he's just nearly beating Christian. I just thought this was like a strange, like if, and this is the thing, if you were having the dynamite of your life because of all these events that had actually popped off in the way you would have liked, this would have ground it to a halt.
Slam the brakes on, yeah. So anyway, Hardy goes for a elbow drop off the side of the apron after being on there for ages.
Everything took ages.
Goes through the table. Christian sends it back in, kill switch, 1, 2, 3. Post-match, Christian's setting up for the concerto on Matt Hardy. Jungle Boy's music doesn't hit. Obviously, he's been ejected. Mm-hmm. But Luchasaurus's music does. Christian's still a bit concerned. And then you see Jungle Boy, who I think they said had bought a ticket, comes from the crowd with a Christian is a pussy t-shirt. and Christian, yet again, bails. But this time, the invisible wall stops Jungle Boy going after him.
What is going on with Luchasaurus? Why did he help Christian those weeks?
Well, it made sense. They sort of tried to explain it last week, didn't they? Jungle Boy said the only reason that he was doing it was he was making sure no one could get to Christian until I could.
Yeah. But, I mean, he beat up some people pretty bad.
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
it's not really completely tied.
He was kind of cruel, wasn't he? Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on. Daniel Garcia's backstage, quite rightly says, submitting the American Dragon was the biggest win in AEW history. He's the Dragon Slayer.
Great.
And when he comes back, he's going to slay the dragon again. Mm-hmm. I thought, good.
Yeah, I'll have another go at that.
Pac defended his All-Atlantic title against Connor Mills in a video package. And then we get Ethan Page in the ring with a mic. He wants to know why. Why is he not on TV every single week? Why is he being overlooked? He deserves better. In the midst of all this, we see Stokely Hathaway walking down to the ring. Page complains and complains and talks about, you crowd are cheering for me now, but you still buy those bloody Orange Cassidy and CM Punk t-shirts and not my t-shirt.
Which was nice because he constantly held his back to Stokely and didn't know that they were cheering for him.
Mm.
So even in that moment of delusion, like he in his mind, he's thinking, well, yeah, like why won't you buy my shirt?
Mm. And he needs those merch sales because I've discovered, I think it was Chris Van Vliet, and I shout out him anyway because I love him. Ethan Page, different shirt every single time he's on telly.
Wow.
Never wears the same shirt twice.
I like that.
Which is a nice touch.
Becky Lynch, Seth Rollins tick, isn't it?
Mm. And Stokely Hathaway, as you say, he finally realises that he's in there after he's moaned and moaned and moaned. Stokely says, what are you doing?
Mm.
And he whispers something in his ear. And then Ethan takes his business card and walks out with him.
Good. Yeah, again, like a cool development. Like Ethan Page's, as we said, with like Stokely's business in general, as good as the Stokely and Jade Cargill and the baddies thing looks long term, that's not what we're all here for.
No.
Like, think about why you've got a manager that can talk.
He whispered, do you want to be a baddie?
Yeah. Everyone he's assembling is just to be a baddie. I like this. I'm sure everybody likes this pairing. Stick it on the list of things that like you would want to see written down, but then didn't feel mega hot as it happened. But I liked it.
I'm withholding judgment because I'm slightly concerned this is going to happen and then nothing's going to happen for 3 weeks and then they're going to go, do you remember the Stokely Hathaway Ethan Page thing? And I'll go, what's this?
Well, yeah, like the Men of the Year are finished, I guess, as of this. Or does Scorpio Sky next week be like, well, what's going on? And
I just want Stokely Hathaway to absolutely ether your man.
Oh, crikey, that'd be good, wouldn't it? Yeah.
What's his name? Well, Dan Lambert.
Dan Lambert, yeah.
Stars of the
Let's
show.
Let's go!
Stars of the show backstage. That means 2.0, of course.
Oh, my God. Yeah, this is great.
Matt Menard does it. I mean, I can't do it justice. I say this sometimes for like epic promos and stuff. It's just him putting over Le Champion. Puts him over.
Two times!
He's so good. We love him so much. We love both of them, to be fair, because Parker's there as well.
Yeah.
And he goes, you're getting smart, Tony? You know what you're getting? And he's like, the flick knife, flick comb.
Amazing.
Is that for sale? Because if it isn't, it should be, and someone should buy it me for my birth.
It was apparently for sale in France when I was younger, because people would go on school trips to France and come back with flick combs and go, it's a comb, no, no. And I was like, wow, where'd you get that? Paris. All the way to frigging France on a school trip and you bought a comb. he's a real loser here. It's great, man. These are brilliant. Anna Jay was great.
Parker squares up. You getting smart, Tony? Huh? He's sleeping with the fishes. No. He says everyone should appreciate them and appreciate the JAS and their newest member, Anna JAS. She gets fired up. I think it's just like, you know, like contact highs.
Yeah.
I think it's just being around them two. She gets fired. She's like, I'm the fucking sexiest. I'm the toughest. I'll choke anyone out. You, and just goes and puts a Queenslayer on a staff member, I think.
It's great, right? So there's a side energy to the JAS. You've got like Chris Jericho as this leader, and as a group, they're all for him, right? That's the point of it. And Daniel Garcia is now getting this great run. He's just defeated Bryan Danielson. He's a Dragon Slayer now. But these three kind of remind you that, like, you do not want the JAS to turn up at your house party. Like, they've got this really awful vibe where, like, you kind of want to stay as far away from them as possible, because if this is the energy to keep all the time, you can't keep that yourself. It's just negative and it's toxic and it's vile.
Hey man, I think these guys are doing drugs in your bathroom. No, they're like that all the time.
This is just them.
Right, now it is time for the dumpster match. We're scissoring in the studio, that's
yes,
right.
Yes, we are.
The Acclaimed versus the Gun Club.
Put your trousers back on.
Austin and Colton come out with Billy, of course. They didn't do my spot. Came close. I was a bit of me that thought, oh!
Can we talk about Max Caster's trousers? He had Road Dogg tights on, and yes. That's all I... That, and the sort of shit...
Bowens, Bowens had trunks on as well. Yeah,
with scissors instead of kisses. And was it Austin or Colton doing the Road Dogg shake, rattle and roll punches
yes,
and all
was
that?
Austin, maybe.
That's all the Road Dogg I need. Thank you very much. Yeah. It was great.
No more.
Enough.
Gun Club are making their entrance and the Acclaim run out and attack them. And I go, we're not getting the rap.
Yeah.
But they beat them down so much because they clobber them all with trash cans that, we got time.
Yeah.
Hear my music. Yo, listen. Combo of two things. Mm-hmm. Number one, the line from Max Caster. Number two, the face from Anthony Bowens.
Amazing.
He's going to make the Ass Boys retire like Vince McMahon.
Wow. Everybody enjoyed that.
Everyone
enjoyed it.
Loved that. It's like, was it a Fallout meme? Everyone liked that.
Bowens nailed this in the cartoon shock. It's funny. So him doing the kind of like just open mouth.
It's that rap battle.
Right, so there's an element of that. But it was so expressive. It was almost if like, what if he's got power one day again and we need a job there? Like there was this moment of like, oh God, what are you gone done? like that was great too. Loved it. Really.
See,
loved it.
Cena shared a photo of Caster on his Instagram.
Oh, he's got a cheeky Instagram. That's his game, isn't it? He likes sort of shouting people out tacitly.
Dr. Thuganomics going to AEW.
I mean, you're laughing. Afternoon news.
Right, Gun Club anyway, recover whilst they're busy rapping and attack. Bowen sort of slumped over the side of the dumpster, so they just slammed the lid on his head. They powerbomb Bowens into it, send Caster in as well, but just before they can shut both lids, they prevented them. That's where I did it on the scissor spot.
Yeah.
Wouldn't have been better, wouldn't it?
There
I probably
it was.
Booked it better, Tony. Sorry, mate. Anyway, but because they've been in the bin, they find some cookie sheets. Bonk off of both of them. That takes us to a break. Bowens gets shoved off the top of the dumpster through this pile of trash cans that they've set up. The Gun Club are in control, basically. They set up a table. Colton suplexes Caster on the stage and they hit the Colt 45 on Bowens on the ramp. Austin goes up top one of the entrance tunnels, and Bowens is propped up on a table, but Bowens recovers, attacks Colton. Caster appears at the top behind Austin and sends him flying into the dumpster, and there's like spoof or something in it because it flows, flies up when he gets sent in, which looked great. Bowens sets up Colton. Caster hits the mic drop off the top of the entrance tunnel, through him, through the table. Colton gets shoved in the dumpster. They shut both lids. They win the dumpster match, and then, so I had insult to injury, and I kind of felt for them here, because it was like a very narrow bit of like, yeah, if you go wrong here, this is just going to get trapped in a little gap that they've got
it
the lights
a bit
and
like
pyro
shopping
in.
Trolley, didn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm bad enough, yeah, pushing a trolley around bloody Tesco's.
Yeah.
So they zip tie the lid shut, shove it off, and it bundles over spectacularly.
Really scary.
I hope they're all right.
Yeah, I hope they're okay. That was really scary. Like, it wasn't necessary, but you could see that was where this was headed when the dumpster was on the stage and it was positioned as it was. It was quite like I hope they're all right. That's all. I'm not like doing a safety police bit here because it looked amazing. Of course it did. It's an important like moment in the Outlaws.
I think the fact we didn't see into the thing spoke volumes.
Yeah.
In terms of presumably how much bloody padding they've got in there.
Like it was an important moment in the Outlaws career in getting over the way they did. And like that was it's dumpster stuff. That's what this was all about.
Trash day.
It was pretty scary. The match was, but it looked cool. And I was glad that like Bowens got around and pulled before they both just tried to push. Because imagine if they were both pushing, it was going nowhere. It looked a bit ungainly,
yes.
Didn't it? The match was.
I got vibes of that Mania where they almost cut the entire power to the thing.
Yeah, like just goes over the wire.
Oh, where are you going?
Like sets one firework.
Sets the pyro.
Sets one of Jericho's flames off. Something. It was good enough. This it wasn't. It's such a thing in this episode. It was fun. Like, he's just jumping off the ramp through a table. Why am I not leaping up and screaming?
Yeah.
I cannot. Right. Has Brock Lesnar lifted in with a tractor broke and everything? Like, that was. Wow. I can't stop staring at this ring. It rings up. Dad. Dad, the ring's up.
Right? The amount of people who've messaged me or even like the missus. Because obviously they know that I work for What Culture.
Yeah.
Who've come up to her and gone, you seen that Brock Lesnar thing? Like, it's gone viral. So they've done what they wanted to achieve. But I think, like you say, it's broken quite a lot of wrestling fans' brains.
My wife has a real irrational dislike of Brock Lesnar. Because
fix that immediately.
As I've said before, we were at a Raw on our honeymoon 12 years ago now. And it was the one where John Cena was like supposed to be gone forever. And then he beat up the Nexus. And he says,
I remember it.
Guys, I might have to go away for a while, but I just want one less taste. And it was like, come on, guys, give me your best. And you remember the Let's Go Cena sucks when he orchestrates it, plays conductor. And she's like, what the hell is this? This is amazing. Who's this guy? So she always like quite liked John Cena. And then she just dips in and out through me, through osmosis.
What do you think about Walter?
Well, she says he's very handsome.
Oh, okay, good.
Says he's very, very handsome. She says, like, she was like, I wouldn't recommend an extremely long-term relationship slash marriage with him, but like, I think he's very handsome. And so
he knows how to handle a bag of crisps.
Looks good with a spoon, especially a magic one. The SummerSlam match where he just decimates him, and the Extreme Rules match where he bludgeons him. She's like, what's he doing to him?
He's a bully.
That seems really unnecessary. So, like, doesn't have much nice things to say about Brock Lesnar.
He's got a man bun now, love. Come on.
Well, right. So, like, she's not really seen Brock Lesnar post-pandemic. And I was like, you've got to see this thing. So I'm skimming along, and I press play. And it's right when he's in the tractor with his flannel on, his hat, with a big old grin, like driving to the ring. His music's still playing.
Yeah.
Boom, ba-dum, boom. And she's like, I mean, what's that? Like, big smile, because I was like, he's got you. He's absolutely got you. What happened to him? And I was like, oh, yeah, he's a cowboy, lunatic farm boy now. It's it's amazing. Like, what's he going to do with that? And then I showed him where he's like, he's doing his own dancing intro on the bucket from the thing.
Oh.
And it's like, all right, yeah, it's pretty good. I was like, no. Hold on.
Yeah.
So she thinks she's seen the thing that I wanted to show her. And then, like, she's just in disbelief at the ring going up. Like, it's the push first. And, like, Michael Cole goes like, God damn it! Or something like that, because there's a ring
coming. I think he's going to fly in.
Yeah, there's a ring coming for him. And she was like, you can't do that. And I was like, wait there. And then the whole thing goes up. And, again, perfect reaction. I love it. I love it when she does this, like, is that meant to happen? I was like, it is. And look at it. And she was like, all right, that's pretty great. And I don't know, like, the table spot is the sort of thing that you just should be, like, maybe it's a context thing because it was a dumpster match instead of a main event for a title, or maybe it was on television instead of, maybe if it was on pay-per-view, You know, if this was a spot in Anarchy in the Arena, you'd be like, yeah. You'd be like, everything's gone ape at this point, and like somebody's appearing at the top of the ramp and da da da. But it was just like, maybe because the dumpster match itself was more knockabout than violent.
And you don't have to pin him straight away. You yeah. would go, oh, okay, they've done that. Now they've got to get him in the dumpster.
And I was nervous because I knew what he was going to go for, that he was going to clip his legs on the dumpster. You know, because he was siding his body. I knew that was what he was going to go for. And it was a bit like, oh. So really great. Well done, everybody. Why am I not squealing?
I don't know. I'm fascinated to see what people's reactions are to this.
Give us your numbers. Give us your ratings and WWE. Your feelings. Yeah, so you check the tweet in a bit.
Then they went, time to check out what happened to Ric Flair's last match. And I went, what?
Cool, this man. Like, just AEW, this is what AEW should be here for. Like, the only clips you shouldn't be able to see on a Dynamite are the ones from Raw and SmackDown and NXT. Because why not have access to everything else? The All Atlantic title's cool. Footage of a battle royal on another card is cool. Mance Warner versus John Moxley for one night is cool. Like, just great. Like, this should be wrestling.
Yeah, we are going to get Mance Warner versus John Moxley on Rampage. Championship eliminator because he won the Bunkhouse Battle Royal at Ric Flair's last match. And we'll preview that on tomorrow's Rampage. I think we'll do a Rampage Battle of the Belts combined preview. Cool. It's probably easiest.
I didn't see who he last eliminated from the Battle Royal, but it's just some guy off a loser podcast.
Yeah, no idea. Yep. Irrelevant. Right, then it was time for the main event. Chris Jericho versus Wheeler Yuta, William Regal on commentary. And because, of course, our ringside, Claudio comes out to even the numbers.
Yes.
Which makes sense.
Love that little whispery, I'm Claudio goddamn Castagnoli in the build-ups of the Castro match.
Yes.
Amazing stuff.
Yeah, I forgot about
that. They every time he speaks, that it's just the whole thing's going through your head. Like, people don't connect, Steve. He's Swiss.
Mm.
You stupid old bastard. Resign in disgrace in 6-8 years.
I can't believe that he's only going to hold that title till Saturday.
I know. Such a shame, eh?
And the best wrestler in the world right now is going
to
win it.
Take it back to Japan with him.
Honestly, he's come into my life, this lad.
Yeah.
I love him.
He's great, isn't he?
Don't leave. Okay. Anyway.
Come right. You can stay around mine.
Yeah, I've got a spare room.
I've got a birthday party soon. Will you come? Will you come to my birthday party?
You like your wrestling? Come after.
Yeah.
Right, Jericho Yuta. Immediately, like I say, you got Parker and Angelo. Sorry, I should be giving his real name right here. Cool Hand Ange.
Yeah.
And Daddy Magic are out there. Pretty much immediately, Cool Hand Ange grabs Yuta's boot and they go, yeah, get out. It's like you say, if you invite him to a party, you're like, don't break anything. Okay, I'm just going to go in there and get the door. Adam, I broke your vase. What? 2 seconds. Immediately they get ejected. And because he's a baby face, Claudio leaves as well.
His own volition, yes.
There you go. Jericho cuts Yuta off before we go to commercial. He dominates through the break. And then Yuta comes back with an atomic drop and an enziguri. They both go for crossbodies. They're both down. They both just start trading slaps in the center of the ring. Yuta hits his move now, apparently, the German suplex. Yeah. It's 4 of them. Bridges, 2 count. Jericho comes back, puts him in the walls of Jericho. Yuta has to crawl to the ropes. But he recovers, sends Jericho out to the floor. Suicide dive after suicide dive after suicide dive. Hits a diving crossbody for a near fall back inside. Jericho hits an underhook backbreaker. Yuta, though, counters a lion salt, climbs up top. Jericho turns the dive into a code breaker for a near fall. But Yuta, using his experience and to the glee of his trainer on commentary, puts Jericho in the regal stretch. But Jericho grabs Floyd the bat and they're like, well, you can't use that. That gets him out of it. And that's when he hits the kick in the bollocks, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Because the referee's
busy with that. Yuta manages to dodge the side effect, though. Dodge the Judas effect, sorry. And I 100% bought that seatbelt cradle because of what they did with Trent.
Yeah.
Previously, thought that was the finish. Fantastic near fall. But Jericho kicks out and puts him in the lion tamer with the knee right on the back of the neck. Bend Looks him. Horrible, that.
Bend it. Like, I get all edge. I'm like, I need this. Bend him more.
Like, the years of... Like, I'm sure if you put me in the walls of Jericho, I'd be like, this sucks. Mm. But because I spent so many years of him putting it on and going, well, this isn't getting the victory. Yeah. You remember when he used to like go, whoa, whoa, and then their legs would flick or like that. I'm always like, it probably doesn't hurt this. I seem to remember when we first got into wrestling, when we were doing like drama and they're like, go off and create your own play for like 20 minutes and the teacher's just going to have a sleep in the room. Yeah. She's probably been out the night before or something, right? We just made a children's play that involved all of us putting different wrestling moves on each other. And I remember being put in the Walls of Jericho and going, this hurts a lot more than they make it look like on telly, even though they should, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm always like, that's not getting the victory. Fucking Lion Tamer does though, doesn't it? Uh-huh. Jesus Christ, that gets the submission victory from Wheeler Yuta. Post-match, Jericho still won't let go of it. He's torturing him. Moxley does his entrance. He is pissed off. He chases him out of the ring. And Jericho gets on the ramp and says, you know, next week, Quake. Which one is it?
Quake by the lake.
Thank you. Quake by the lake. I believe I even possibly put it in our write-up yesterday. It's Quake at the lake, so apologies for that.
That's everybody.
Anyway, next week, you know, you've basically wished for the wrong thing here, Moxie. You want, you know, you want the last survivor of the dungeon. You know, you want Lionheart. Well, he's returning next week, and he's going to stretch the shit out of you, John Moxie, and win that title.
I mean, I cannot wait to see Chris Jericho's Lionheart tights, those black ones with the yellow triangles in it. Oh, my God. I would describe this as really bloody lovely wrestling. Mm. This was a great little match. Jericho, when I say Jericho kept up with Wheeler Yuta, I don't mean it in that sort of condescending, hey, this Jericho kid can go. I just like, you know, Yuta wrestles at a certain pace and a certain fury, and Jericho more than met him. Just a really earnest, good physical exchange of two men's abilities in a convincing fashion where the better and more experienced man won on the night. I didn't leave this thinking that, well, do you know what? In perfect contrast to the opener, where I left feeling, oh man, a young guy, not young, Cassie, like an Uprising Stars stock has really been damaged by this defeat. I left thinking, just wasn't your night, mate. Like, there'll be another day where you'll beat Chris Jericho because you could have had him tonight and it just didn't go your way. We got the one near four we asked for. Make me bite once and I'm happy. Yeah. And they did. Like, a really, really tremendous little bit of business this, when it didn't even need to happen. They could have done the, I always go back to the Sean Spears Wardlow cage match, where it's like, you don't need to tell me this bit of the story. I know how this goes. Like, they didn't need to do this bit of the story, but they found a way to do it and make it entertaining.
Yes.
The stakes were all this needed. Jericho was made to, like, look a bit of a fool. He showed his arse on Rampage, and tonight he got to be the experienced guy, so you can believe for 7 days that he might be the guy to dethrone John Moxley next week. Really, really, really good bit of business, this.
Do you know what? Final thing I forgot to mention, really, which I guarantee, I mean, I think he even mentioned it on commentary, Regal's gone, yeah, he target that. Anytime, like, Jericho started rolling early on, you would just go, bump, in his face, because he's got a broken nose, because of course you would, and Regal's probably gone, yeah, even if you don't really need to hit him in the nose, hit him in the nose.
He needs to start with the headbutt right to the bridge of the nose that match next week, doesn't it? Like, bleeding from the first second.
Son of a bitch!
Like, Jericho's nose explodes, Moxley's head bleeds, because that's all that happens now, and the two of them are off.
off to the races for Quake by the lake.
By the lake.
I'm slowly learning. right, let us know your thoughts, please do, and your rating for this show on Twitter, at WhatCultureWWE. Watch, you can follow both of us. You can follow Michael Hamflitz at
Podcast Horseman.
You can follow me at Adam Wilborn. Follow our esteemed colleague at M. Sidgwick and read his brilliant book, Becoming All Elite, The Rise of AEW, which is available to buy on Amazon right now. And make sure you subscribe to What Culture Wrestling, wherever you get your podcasts from, for daily wrestling podcasts, including, as I mentioned, our preview of Rampage and Battle of the Belts 3 tomorrow. But for now, this has been the AEW Dynamite review. My thanks to Michael Hamflitz. Thank you for joining us. Thanks to Adam Blair once again.
Yes.
For... Ladies, night. And we will see you soon.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.